Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Things Therapy. I'm your host, Lisa Tahir. I'm a licensed clinical social worker practicing as an intuitive psychotherapist. Most importantly, I would love to connect with you as my listener. I'd love to know who you want to hear me interview, how I can reach them. If you're interested in being a guest, you can reach out to me through my website, which is NOLATherapy.com. It's the abbreviation for New Orleans, Los Angeles Therapy, as I have private practice offices in both cities, and it's spelled NOLATHERAPY.com. There are links there for you to listen to archived episodes of this show on iTunes and Google Play. Please subscribe. And I am putting a book out in 2019 that addresses how we can heal our core wounding through self-forgiveness and empathy. There's a link at NOLA Therapy for you to enter your email so I can update you with that information. So please do so. I'd love to be in touch with you and meet you where you are. Okay, I want to introduce my guest because I'm really excited to be having on in moments a colleague and friend, Benjamin Decker. He is a best-selling author, a social activist, a meditation teacher. He's director of education at the Institute for Transformational Thinking, and an entrepreneur who actually left the Hollywood PR profession to follow his calling as a spiritual teacher. And today we're going to discuss that component, those components of his life, as well as his book that's available now. It's titled Practical Meditation for Beginners, 10 Days to a Happier, Calmer You. And this is a book that he wished was around when he began to explore meditation. Ben actually started meditating as a child around the age of 4 or 5 because of the family that he grew up in. But as an adult, he really embraced meditation to help him transition from the stress of working in Hollywood in the way that he was. And now he put this book out, which is a sample. It's a cross-disciplinary approach where you can actually experience 10 meditation techniques. And in my experience, this book facilitates the creation of a foundation that you can build upon. Ben, welcome, and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Lisa. Happy to be here with you.
Thank you. How are you today?
I'm doing really well. I'm having a great day. I'm feeling healthy. I meditated. I worked with a client, taught a new client how to meditate. I'm having a great day. How's your day?
It's going really well. I meditated also and just continue to prepare, yes, for our show. And I wonder where you want to start with our listeners today about your work and what brought you to this work.
You know, actually, something that came up when you were sharing your very generous introduction to me, you said my calling as a spiritual teacher. And what I usually say is a meditation teacher.
Okay.
I think that there's something throughout history that I love. I love studying multiple traditions. As you know, that's really what birthed this book. I love all learning about all different kinds of traditions, all different kinds of saints and sages and prophets and all the mythological narratives of spiritual traditions from indigenous practices, but also the Eastern and Western esoteric traditions all over the world. And when I look throughout history, I see this goal that every religion and every spiritual lineage had, which was to create a peaceful world. To create a world of right human relations where we are interacting with each other in a way that's respectful and dignified, and we interact with even other beings like animals and even plants in a way that's dignified and divine and holy. And, you know, Christians call it heaven on earth, you know, as referenced to in the Lord's Prayer, on earth as it is in heaven. But then it's also in other prophecies and other even indigenous certain narratives of a future generation of peace. We also hear about the golden age, you know. So throughout, when I grew up in the house I grew up in, and I learned about spiritual teachers, I found over and over again that they created these subcultures that were their own cults, and they rejected other spiritual practices and other traditions. And so I really embraced a secular role of being a meditation teacher, a cross-disciplinary meditation teacher, rather than using something like the term spiritual teacher, which has a connotation of being connected to religious specifications, in my opinion. You know what I mean?
I do. I actually love what you just said. There was so much there, and your book does exemplify different techniques from other traditions that typically, in my experience of learning about meditation in a hodgepodge kind of Google search way, that they are typically kind of relegated to their own domains, and the way that you bring them together, yet in a way you're approachable, and you're a man living in this world, you know, fully participating, not someone who's kind of unrelatable. You know, you're easy to relate to and down to earth. And so I think what you just said is very accurate from how I've known you and what you're putting out into the world.
Yeah, I think that there's something so special about how all of these different traditions had their different techniques of what we would call meditation. You know, some of these traditions use that actual word. Some, you know, there are other languages, of course, and, you know, other words for similar types of practices. But there were two different things that all these different traditions all over the world had. And it was one, your personal practice, the personal rituals, the personal initiation, the personal spiritual journey of the individual, and the group or community or family or ceremonial aspect. That was the initiation within the community. These are marriages and baptisms and rites of passage and bar mitzvahs, you know. And so I think that this book, I had so much fun creating it and getting organized with it. And I love my editor, Camille Hayes, such an amazing woman, helped so much, really conceptualize the initial concept and really brought it together and in such a wonderful way. Could love her so much. Oh my gosh. But the whole 10 days is about that first aspect that every tradition in the entire world emphasizes, which is your personal practice, your personal journey, your initiation. And then that very end of the book, I introduce the concept. I don't know if you saw that in there, but I introduce the concept of the group practice.
Yes. Yes. As kind of building, what is it called? That's, I learned more terminology from your book than I had. The Sangha, the community. Is that how you say the word?
Yeah. Sangha. Yeah.
Sangha. Thank
exactly.
You.
Exactly. Yes, spiritual community, yes. And so that idea of, and that's, of course, a word that is specifically associated with Buddhism, especially, you know. But it's a good word because it means that specific thing, but it can also be said in 100 other ways, you know. But it's that idea of people that you have some kind of accountability with, who know you, who know about what you've got going on, who care about you, who you break bread with, mm-hmm. who you get sacred with, you know, and that's something that I love even doing in my own way. Of course, I teach a lot of group meditations. I facilitate a lot of group meditations, both in community aspects, also with corporate clients, professional environments, you know, that kind of thing. But also through the Institute for Transformational Thinking, I know you've been to a number of our Sacred Sundays Sangha events.
Yes.
You know, that's Sangha, you know, where we come together and we meditate. Sometimes we sing and sometimes we do yoga and sometimes we read and sometimes there's a performance, you know, and it doesn't really matter, but we always have meditation and we always have that that community group aspect. And so that's what I thought was, I think, the most special fun part about this book, was that we were able to honor all spiritual traditions from all over the world in the way that we could, in the most relatable, gentle kind of way, and connect it in with modern science, with what we know, the most up-to-date science we could access, in the most relatable, communicatable, understandable way, and then take you through that foundational practice through 10 days of your own personal retreat in your own life, not giving you an environment where you don't have to continue living, but doing it in your own reality, making your home the sacred temple, making your life that holy retreat for those 10 days. And then saying, hey, what if you did this with your friends? What if you did this with your community? You know,
I can speak to our listeners about the significance of connecting with a community in the way that you're speaking of it. I found you from your business partner, Aura Nadrich, and she's the president of the Institute for Transformational Thinking. You're the director of education, and attending those Sacred Sunday events opened up for me a way to have community that just felt like a hunger that I had that I didn't even quite know I had until being in those rooms and in the settings with people that share a like-mindedness around approaching how we can find solutions for problems and issues in the world by starting with ourselves, you know, cleaning out the inside of ourselves. So I'm really grateful to you and Aura for hosting these events. And in 2 weekends, I'm attending a very intense weekend workshop with you all on thought coach transformation. And just can you speak to our listeners about if somebody is intimidated, because it's kind of intimidating to branch out and to do something new and different, even when you're curious, and how you might help your clients and people try out, say,
well,
finding a community.
That's the perfect thing. Yeah, like finding a community, you know, and that's the thing is, you're talking about a really specific quality. It's almost like an archetypal experience that we all have. And on one hand, it's about relating to a community, but on the other hand, it's about anything that's new. It's about going outside of our comfort zone, you know? And so whether that means you're going outside your comfort zone to find people who you're going to be able to relate to in another way, or you're going outside your comfort zone just to relate to yourself in a different way, it's the same energy feeling, you know? And so what I really love about what we've been able to create, you know, I was raised in a really, I believe, a very spiritual household that was very open to, you know, we talked very openly about our ancestors, about visionary dreams. We prayed and meditated and sang and studied sacred texts together as a family. Every one of my brothers went through a 4-year seminary training program. My father is a descendant of a founding family of the Mormon Church. My mother is from a very, very spiritual family. Her mother was a big part of my childhood, my mother's mother, my paternal grandmother. And she was a very spiritual woman, and she talked to me about reading signs and about understanding meaningful coincidences and things. So I feel like I was raised in an environment that really, in the ways that it was able to, really wanted to nurture community and wanted to make the home a sacred place, you know. And when I went out into the world, even just as a 7, 8, 9-year-old, I found, especially because of my sexuality, that the extended community wasn't very open to me.
Okay.
That the extended community there didn't exactly accept me for who I was and didn't really allow me to experience life as me, you know. And it caused me to go seeking, and it caused me to go really in my own heart deeper than I ever could have gone. My heart really had to go through some deep, broken-hearted type initiation. And I explored a lot of different religions, and I went to a lot of different religious community groups and different kinds of meditation groups and prayer groups and healing circles and healing conferences and you know, all across the gambit, you know. And I found that there was a beautiful, gentle sincerity that did exist. And I believe that gentle sincerity is truth. It's spirit. It's true spirit. It's God.
Mm-hmm.
And I found God in every single one of those spiritual communities in the faintest little way. And I wanted more. And I was like, you know, there's something about the personalities of these communities where they're not open to me. There's something about the culture that's separating me from this community. You know, there was always a subtle sense of camaraderie, but oftentimes when you go into a sacred place or a temple, it's common to not feel welcome there.
Mm-hmm.
As sad as it is to acknowledge, it's actually really true. And it's something I really experienced. And so a couple of years ago, I started a spiritual center in Venice with a handful of really wonderful friends, especially Andrew Keegan and Gennar Lovelace. And we opened a spiritual center called Full Circle Venice. And this concept of Full Circle really came from the name of Gennar's family farm, Full Circle Farm in Ojai. But it meant for me this idea of unity consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
That we're here in the family together, you know, and we wanted to create a community center that didn't make us feel rejected. You know, you go to some of these Buddhist centers, Hindu centers, Christian centers, Mormon centers, everything, you name it, and there's a certain sense of, am I welcome here? Am I accepted here? Is it okay to be me here? And I couldn't shake it, you know. So we made an attempt to create that space, and at the time it was one of the only non-religious places where you could go meditate. Shortly thereafter, a place called Unplug Meditation opened. There's now two locations of Unplug. A place called the Den Meditation later opened up. Several other meditation centers opened up after that. And that was really inspiring for me to see that other people were responding to the same thing that I was responding to in my heart, which was that there was something to the practice, there was something to group practice, but we didn't necessarily have to believe the same narrative or the same mythology or the same pronouns or proper nouns of the who did this and who did that and what God's up to and all of that, you know, that there was a more subtle space related to peace, life and love and the present moment that unified all of them.
You know, Ben, there's a question I had kind of sketched out roughly to ask you, and I feel like it's coming up in everything that you're saying right now, that what I'm hearing is a deeper truth that you're talking about is the involvement and engagement in which you do in your life, I do in my life, is that consistent work of differentiating what is sourced from ego, from a place of fear, where we feel separate than and alone, even in a room, a church, a gathering of where we would like to feel safe. So differentiating between what's sourced from that fear-based place and who's our true self, like based in a place of love and compassion and our interconnectedness. And I wanted to ask you, how do you work with these concepts and incorporate it into teaching meditation?
Well, I think that one of the most beautiful concepts that relate, that's a great question, first of all. But I
Thank
think one
you.
Of the most beautiful concepts that has its thread through all of these spiritual traditions. See, here's the thing. We are from a long line of people who did not have the internet. So they didn't keep in touch with their friends in the other continents or their ancestors or their cousins, okay? So we forgot that our friends and the brothers and sisters and the cousins that live on other parts of the planet, we forgot that they're our cousins. And over time, they looked so different from us that we felt different from them. You know, I have cousins that I haven't seen since I was a kid. I have friends that I haven't seen since high school. And I'm going to Cincinnati in October to do my very first meditation training. And with my mom, you know, she's a chocolatier, Karma in the Kitchen, we're doing a mindful chocolate tasting. And I'm nervous to see people who I haven't seen since high school because
wow.
of how much we've all
yeah.
seen.
Yeah. Is that the workshop you're doing in Nashville?
I'm doing a workshop in Cincinnati, and another workshop in Nashville.
Okay.
And we're working on some details of something in Dallas also in October. So I'm going on a little bit of a teacher training tour where we're really going to be training yoga instructors and therapists and coaches and that kind of thing through the Institute for Transformational Thinking in practical meditation teacher training. Practical meditation teacher training. You know, and that's also something interesting to acknowledge about a lot of these meditation teacher trainings. They're associated with the initiation into one spiritual lineage. That's not what I'm doing here. When you go to Target to start your job as a cashier, they put you in training. And they're not initiating you into the cult of Target. They're teaching you some of the basics, some of the fundamentals, and they're teaching you how to do the job, you know. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm doing in these trainings is teaching people who already know how to hold space, who are already people helpers and coaches and therapists and yoga teachers and already group facilitators, and I'm teaching them how to practically apply each of these 10 different meditation techniques using this book as the handbook, as the guide.
And I think it's interesting that you're going back into some of these places with people, like you were saying, that you haven't seen in years.
Right.
And wow.
And so you think about that with your ancestors and the multiple generations of, you know, just me and just a few, you know, just in, you know, the last 15 years or so, I haven't seen some of these people and how much has changed over 15 years. Now imagine several generations of losing touch with those cousins that live on other parts of the planet, so much so that their entire diet is different, their entire exposure to the elements is different, their entire practices and creative inheritances are so different that then when you see them, they look completely different from you and you hardly even remember them. You hardly even recognize them. We live in a world where we do have the internet and we are interacting with each other and we're slowly but surely starting to remember that we're cousins. We're starting to remember that we're all related and connected. And so, of course, racism is coming to a head and we're starting to really see that for what it is. Mm-hmm. That's a remnant of the past. That is
yes.
something that is so old school. It's long gone and never existed. You know, it's mm-hmm. stupidity is really what it is. It's ignorant and violent stupidity. Nothing else, nothing more, nothing less. The reality is that there's one human lineage that goes through all of our veins. And from a spiritual perspective, that which lived, because of the fact that it lived, it contains divinity. Life is divinity. That which lives is sacred. All life is sacred, you know. And so when we go into these different churches and community centers and stuff, and we see different cultures, there's a certain kind of beginner's mind and beginner's heart that
yeah.
we have to approach it with, where we say, look, these people are just like me. These people are in their own culture. I'm different from them. I'm new to them, too. You know,
yes.
And we go in with that open heart and that open mind, like a beginner. I think that we access something much truer when we go in like that, you know, and we lock in. And there are some communities that have that fear-based perspective woven into the community itself,
mm-hmm.
and that's a bummer when that happens, because that's sort of like a cockroach in the taco. Yeah, I mean, it's like
yeah.
you eat, there's 5 bites in that taco, you eat 4 bites and they're delicious. It's the best vegan, organic, delicious taco you've ever had in your entire life. And then that 4th bite has a cockroach in it, that ruins the taco.
Right.
So when a community has judgment or prejudice or full-blown ignorance, like racism, woven into it, it's impossible to access that deeper transcendental space, which I believe is God, which is that light of spiritual connectivity and equality that you can experience with other beings. And I think that that's why I encourage people to be brave with meditation, to share meditation with each other, especially sharing meditation with people who are different religions than you. You can meditate with five people in a room and have every one of you have a completely different religion and one of them be a total atheist and a total science person. And
yes.
you can connect on meditation and you can go there and it'll be good.
It unifies people
right.
who usually might not
exactly.
be with each other. Ben, we're going to take a quick commercial break and be right back.
Indeed, listening is the new reading. With Audible, you can listen to an unlimited amount of books at home, in your car, at the gym, anywhere on the go. With over 180,000 audiobooks to choose from, for you, the listener of all things therapy, Audible is offering you a free audiobook download and a month-long subscription for you to try them out. Visit audibletrial.com/allthingstherapy now. And enjoy.
Do you want to help yourself and friends find a purpose in life?
Then you are in the right place and be a part of the crowdfunding campaign of patreon.com/allthingstherapy with Lisa Tahir as she initiates a one-on-one interaction with inspiring authors, healing experts, and spiritual directors.
Join the League of Heroes of this generation by contributing your quota between $1 up to $100 per month
at patreon.com/allthingstherapy.
And let's make the world free of suicide, poverty, depression, and in all, make the world a better place for everyone.
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, I am with Ben Decker. His website is bendeckermeditation.com. And Ben, I want to share with our listening audience some about your past, because I've just found it really interesting. I found in researching you and even an IMDb listing with you as a younger man acting. And at one point in your life, you ran a fully staffed PR agency, and Forbes published you as being, quote, a shining example of the type of talent that the philanthropic community needs to attract. And at that time, my understanding is that you were working with unlikely heroes. You were director of outreach and strategic partnership. And this organization works with people who are entrapped in the sex slave industry. And there are 27 million people trapped in slavery in our world. It's a $28 billion industry generated from commercial sexual exploitation. And you had an experience being in the Philippines, sitting quietly saying a prayer with young girls that had been rescued by the organization mm-hmm. from sex slavery. They were only around 15. Can you talk to us some about where your shift, how this shift happened from being in Hollywood in that way and the experiences that led you to today?
Yes, definitely. And thank you for bringing that up. You know, when I was in my early teens, you know, I mentioned I was raised Mormon and I'm from a long line of Mormons, and the Mormons are very, very close knit community. And Elizabeth Smart was kidnapped and she was a member of the church and she, you know, all the Mormons feel like they're cousins, you know, and everyone's a brother and everyone's a sister. And so when Elizabeth Smart was kidnapped, she was only, you know, a month or so younger than me. And it was very jarring for me. And I was very aware and I prayed every single day until they found her. And I believed that they would find her and I knew she was going to be okay. And I just remember my young self praying so fervently for her and so sincerely. And I heard the word human trafficking, heard the phrase human trafficking. And it hit me so hard. I had a deep, there was something very heavy about it that I immediately connected to. And over the years I had, you know, been able to support a couple different anti-human trafficking organizations in different ways and learn
yes.
about the problem and learn about what's happening. And so one day I met a woman named Erica Grieve, and Erica was at the very beginning process of creating an anti-human trafficking organization. I met her at a very important time in my life where I was really exploring different religions and I was and I was actually physically unwell when I met her. And she really inspired me, what she was doing and how she was a normal woman who had her own problems and had her own very serious life experiences and trauma that she was processing and living through, that she was dedicating so much of her energy and time and focus, really all of her energy, time, and focus to the modern-day abolitionist movement. And it really changed everything for me. And I was at the time doing all these red carpet events, very celebrity-driven things. I met Erica, and I immediately, even before I met her, I was like, I want to do things for her. I'm going to help her. I'm going to activate this. I'm going to bring lots of energy to her. I'm going to do whatever I can in whatever ways I can to help this woman do her thing. We became great friends. We built a wonderful business together. I learned so much. She was such a great friend and mentor and taught me so much about the world and about what's really happening in the world, and taught me how to pray in ways that I never connected to. You know, she really had a very living experience with her faith as well, which really is what activated her to do the work. All very inspiring. And I had the opportunity to go to the Philippines and do some work with a group of the trafficking survivors, like you mentioned. And something really extraordinary happened where they started to pray. And when you go into the different religious communities, it's very sensitive, and a lot of them are very sensitive to their own the name and the faith and the story that they give to God, you know, and so you always have to be very sensitive. And at the time I wasn't as sensitive. I was irritated by it. I was irritated that they only talked about Jesus, and I was like, I don't think Jesus even needs you to say his name that much. I don't think Jesus even wants that or needs that, you know? And so I had a little bit of tude about that at the time, but in true reality, we sat down and we said a prayer, and that prayer came from such a deep, sincere place. And there was so much quietness in that room. And it was not a ton of talking in that prayer. It was quietness and it was presence. And I saw these girls who had been horribly abused go from feeling very uncomfortable and very scared and in really a scary moment for them, and very disconnected from each other. I saw them decompress and self-regulate. I watched them and I prayed for them and during this moment, and there was a beautiful breeze and the chirping of birds. And I just saw in my mind's eye light coming from their heart, filling them up, and that light reset them. That light recalibrated their breath, and it relaxed the tension in their body, and it brought new life into them. And when they opened their eyes, some of them were crying and some of them were laughing. And I thought, we could do that with everybody. You know, I looked at them and I thought, wow, what a miracle. This is extraordinary. These beautiful girls are getting a new lease on their life. This is a powerful organization, a very important work that's being done. And I also saw another work, another opportunity where there was a certain kind of peace that everyone needs in their heart, and a certain kind of reminder and a certain kind of opportunity to allow our natural divinity and our natural light within us to reset us.
You know, my sense is that might have been the first moment that these young girls have ever felt emotionally, physically, and sexually safe enough to be vulnerable in that space that you all provided for them. And how important, that's the blessing of meditation. I'm going to jump in because sometimes I even Freudian slip and say medication instead of meditation, because it is that powerful. Meditation is medication for fear, for anxiety. So continue. I just felt like I really wanted to share that with our audience.
No, that's really good. You know, and I think that you're right. I mean, especially, you know, your work as a therapist and all of the deep study that you're constantly on and applying it to your work. And of course, I had the opportunity to read your new upcoming book in advance. I'm really appreciating what you're saying. And it's very true. You have, especially speaking through your professional experience, these girls, that was very insightful. These girls really were in a field that we created. We created a spiritual atmosphere that allowed that which is true and real to dawn on them, even just for that moment.
You know? It's beautiful and powerful.
Really extraordinary. Yeah, that was, you know, you mentioned the PR and everything. That was a really important part of my journey transitioning out. Right about that time, I had actually let go of most of my staff, almost all my staff. I didn't know what I was going to do next, but I knew it wasn't going to be that. I knew I was not being healthy in PR. It wasn't good for me. It wasn't good for me psychologically or emotionally or physically, you know.
Yes.
And Unlikely Heroes was a very important part of me really solidifying that and taking a stand. And for me, it was a very challenging decision to make to leave entertainment.
Certainly, you know? It would have been. Certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding also is that you came back from that experience. You did a training at Yogananda's Self-Realization Fellowship. You worked closely with Marianne Williamson on her congressional campaign and really shifted the way that you've always been of service. That was obvious to me. Even in as a Hollywood PR person, you were working with an organization doing something so important to rescue people from self-trafficking, yet you still needed to care for yourself more deeply is what I gathered in leaving that profession in the way that you did to do what you're doing now.
You know, it wasn't even just about myself. It's that I knew that there was a greater plan that God had for me. And I knew that the way I was treating other people, not just how I was treating myself, the way I was treating other people in the stress and the conditions of the entertainment industry was not okay. I was not okay with what that brought out in me. I didn't like it. It wasn't true for me, and it wasn't me. And so even more than just having to take care of myself, I had to really check in with how I was treating other people.
I hear you.
And that was, and still is, a huge thing. You know, I could blame it on all kinds of different things where, you know, I grew up with a whole bunch of brothers and, you know, if you didn't yell at the top of your lungs, you didn't get to choose the movie that night, you know? So there's that. But one of my favorite things that Marianne, you mentioned Marianne, who was such a wonderful gift to me in my life. And I don't know if she'll ever even know how much she's blessed me, but
I feel the same way. Said, yes.
She's wonderful.
Yeah.
Did you hear those rumors that she was going to be running for president? Did you see that article? There's like all these articles saying
it's amazing.
I mean, I just hope that it's true.
Yes.
I would love to see that happen. I would love to see that happen. I would stop everything and help that happen if she were ever to decide. But anyway, she said something, no matter how you got that way, no matter how you got that neurosis, no matter how you got it, it's yours now. So no matter whether I got my behavioral issues or my anger issues or my relational or communication problems from, I realized through PR, through the experience of PR, how I was treating other people, how I felt like I needed to dominate situations in order to get my way or in order to get into the rooms I needed to get into. I didn't want to be that. I was like, if that's what it takes for me to get into those rooms, I don't even want that. I don't want to be that. That's not who I am. That's not what I am. No. This far and no more. I'm not doing that anymore. And like Mary said, no matter how you got it, it's yours now.
Yes.
You know? And so I'm still on that journey of really self-actualizing, healing, trying to be of service in as clear way as possible, finding the balance, finding my own rhythm where I can also be happy too, you know, where I can be of service, I can heal and also create beautiful things and be in love and have friends and also live in the world.
And meditation is an important tool to facilitate everything that you just listed.
It's everything, you know, and when you've read the book, so you're aware, but for the listeners, there's anything is the meditation. The Buddha taught standing, walking, sitting meditation. There's mindful eating. There's loving kindness. One of my favorite meditations in the book is a loving kindness walking meditation. I don't know if you saw that one in there, but a loving kindness walking meditation. So think about that. Being totally present, walking, especially through your neighborhood where you actually live, walking, and then looking around at any living being that you see, offering it loving kindness from your heart.
You know, another one of the meditation types that you highlighted in it, in addition to that one, is observing your emotions, where one right. notices and acknowledges emotions passing. And what I really love that you wrote is emotions passing alongside of us instead of inside of us. Often, I know I feel like a disturbing emotion, an upsetting emotion is inside of me. And I think as humans, we have this desire, like, get it out of me. And we might medicate through various unhealthy methods. And I like in this right. technique where we can really conceptualize our emotion as being alongside of us. And it's just like, oh, I think you can really exhale into that experience and even be more kind to yourself instead of judgmental.
Right, and even letting it pass through you, you know. You know, through is a special word because it's in one side and out the other. You know, it goes right through. And so the nature of that word is so good too, because it's not in you or on you or around you or trapping you or weighing you down. It just passes through. And I also mention, you know, of course, in the book, you find that I really like to draw people to the teachers that really change things for me. You mentioned Ora Niedrich, who is my mentor. I see her 3 times a week. I love that woman. She's changed
me
my
too.
Life.
A mentor to me as well. Yes.
She is an absolute angel. So you find that I've got her in there mentioning her work in transformational thinking. I've got Dr. Yes. Ron Alexander in there, his work in core creativity. I've got David Kessler in there, his work in grief. Marianne Williamson, of course, specifically Marianne Williamson's book, Tears to Triumph, was mentioned in that chapter you're referring to. There's 2 chapters on emotions. One is on observing the emotion and allowing it to be as it is, which then a couple days later brings us to the next level of that skill set, which is sitting with difficult emotions, breathing through them. And so in Marianne's book, Tears to Triumph, she posits that these challenging experiences that we have are almost like initiatory shamanic experiences. It's the hero's journey, you know, through the experience yes. of them, we become more complex, more refined, and more wise.
You know, I really liked in that portion of your book, Sitting with Difficult Emotions, where you spoke about, and I see it as a bearing witness with oneself going through, yeah. especially as you sat across from David Kessler in the workshop, bearing witness to one's grief without reaching to give a hug or a Kleenex, which sometimes interrupts a person in that space, just sitting, mm-hmm. being with another person or with yourself, witnessing your own pain. It was
right.
beautifully written and important.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. That was such a meaningful chapter for me too. And I was so happy that we were able to get it in there and express it the way that it was. You know, I sometimes envision our body and the magnetic field that our heartbeat creates around our body and the heat that radiates from our body and the, you know, all of the different aspects that create our invisible field around each of us, you know, frequency that each of us have. I sometimes envision that magnetic field as this vibrational, toroidal, spherical type shape, you know, like they say it is. And I envision emotions as the weather, you know, as a sort of sort of invisible weather that kind of moves in, and you envision that field around you almost like sound waves. And that's what I think is so beautiful even about the mantra chapter. And the reason I chose to do an audible mantra instead of a silent mantra, there are silent mantras in that exercise, in that chapter. But the exercise I first and foremost recommend is toning. Toning. And you envision from inside yourself through the lungs and the heart this consistent, pure ear echoing, rippling in all directions from deep inside your voice box and your lungs and your heart, spreading through every cell in your body and throughout that field, dissipating any tension, whether that tension is in a muscle in the body or in the emotional field around us, you know?
And it works. And this idea, I often drive around and I'll just, and feeling the vibration in my mouth and expanding to my forehead. It brings me peace in traffic and situations where I might have received a text that I don't like. Just to sound a tone can change what you're feeling in that moment.
Right. And so that's what I think is the real magic behind, you know, not everyone's going to buy this book. Not everyone's going to study this book. Not everyone's going to get the deeper levels of this book, you know. But one of the deeper levels of it is that it's a combination of these very basic tools that weave in and out of all aspects of our lives. The toning, the mantra, the sitting with difficult emotions, the loving kindness, the walking meditation, the body scan meditation. Speaking of loving kindness meditation, there's a body scan loving kindness meditation. Okay, how many of us here feel like they totally love and accept completely every aspect of our bodies?
Right.
Give me a break.
Right.
You know.
Do you have a favorite type of meditation, Ben, from the ones that you wrote about, the 10 traditions you wrote about?
You know, it's technically more than 10 traditions because the way I presented some of them actually reflects something true of multiple traditions. But the other 10 techniques that are in there, the one that really, I have a tie. It's the first one and the last one. The first
Zazen and loving kindness. Yeah.
Zazen and loving kindness. Zazen, because the breath awareness is so magical. That bridge between the conscious and the unconscious. The breath is something so special where you can control it very easily and it'll do its thing without you even thinking about it, you know? So Zazen breath awareness settles you down into the non-doership where you're allowing the breath to do its thing, but you're fully present with the experiencing the ebb and flow, the waves as they rush through the different aspects of the body, the different parts of the body that move with the breath. And then what I love about loving kindness meditation is it's almost the opposite of that, where it requires that kind of foundation of that deep stillness and the deep allowance of the breath and the heartbeat, you know, and the hyper awareness of the present moment and the focus on this moment now. But it then programs now. It programs this moment with the highest, most sacred, divine ideal honored by every single saint and sage throughout history, which is divine love, perfect peace, perfect compassion. And so you activate what's in the Lord's Prayer, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Think about that in a sense of thy kingdom come. Who is he talking to? What's he saying? He's saying the kingdom of the Most High, the kingdom of love, may thy kingdom come and thy will be done. May the will of love be done on this physical dimension on earth as it is in heaven, heaven being the realm of ideals. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I believe that the foundation of the Zazen that will take you from ordinary human experience into the sacred, magical experience of being a spiritual person, of connecting to the infinite power of the present moment. And then what I love about loving kindness is that you program it with the highest, most sacred, profound
frequency.
Ideal.
Loving kindness meditation frequency. Is my favorite meditation. I did a loving kindness meditation for you before we came live on the air and for every listener listening and whoever will. Ben, how can people reach you who are listening if they want to reach out and study with you, learn more, get involved with the Institute for Transformational Thinking?
You know, I have an upcoming training, and I'm keeping it super affordable. It's $497, a four-week online training where I'm doing three live calls every single week, and everyone will be able to interact with me, and they'll get a lot of different meditation scripts, and we're going to be going into a deep study of this book for 4 weeks starting in October. And so that's the IFTT.org, the Institute for Transformational Thinking, IFTT.org, and that's the best way to study with me because I've been putting so much into that program.
Yes.
It's going to be a really good interactive experience with me, and it's going to be accelerated and amazing. And then also BenDeckerMeditation.com. I'm on Instagram. I'm super active on Instagram and Facebook. I reply to all of my messages personally. I used to have someone managing that stuff for me. Not anymore. I do it all myself. I interact
Wonderful.
With everyone directly.
Beautiful.
So BenDeckerMeditation.com. Yeah.
Ben, thank you so much for coming on today. I love you very much.
I love you very much. Thank you for all your wonderful work, Lisa. Thanks for having me today.
You're welcome. Have a great rest of your day.
All right. You too. Bye-bye. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. That concludes my show today with Ben Decker of BenDeckerMeditation.com. Please join me next week for another guest. And go to NOLA Therapy, NOLATHERAPY.com to engage with me, subscribe to this show, support my work, and let me know who you are so I can be in deeper connection and community with you. Thank you. Bye.
You're listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir.